Will you say that again for me, okay?
Well,
that your mother, you said that your mother,
my mother wouldn't let us use the heater. We had they had portable heaters in the living room, and that went off at 7, you know. So anything that was going to be done had to be done early, by 7. And usually I was in bed by 8 o'clock because I knew I had to get up early in the morning and get off to work again. We all froze. It's cold. And so that's the most that I can remember. And I think that the rest of the girls that I kept in touch with felt that it was just a job. Mm-hmm. It paid a little bit better than anything that we had ever had before. It, as I told you, it started out at 90 cents an hour, and I think that it probably went up to about $1.10. And then we used to ask them to give us overtime, because if we worked on Saturdays, we would be paid overtime, you know. So we wanted to work Saturdays. We wanted the money.
What did you do with your money?
Well, I told you I had to pay room and board. And there were times when my mother didn't know that I kept a little bit of it because I needed it. I tried to save, but I couldn't. There really wasn't very much to spend it on. But I kept thinking that after this job ran out, I wasn't going to have a job. And my mother, I was 18. She expected me to take care of myself and not ask her for anything. So I would have to buy whatever I needed. So I was trying to build a little nest egg to tide me over until I got another job. Never occurred to me that I should to move out. You know, I could have. We just didn't do those things. Besides, there was nowhere to go. There was no housing. I was afraid I'd get into trouble. Even if you roomed with another girl, after I went to work at Sterling, there were several girls who would have liked to have lived closer to work. But I was afraid I wouldn't be able to get along with them. And maybe the division of chores might not work out. And then where would I be? So I couldn't lose my mother's love. You know, I had to keep her happy. So I gave her money. No, and I did my what can you do when you're working all the time? You try. You dust and you clean and you make your bed, and I did my own laundry. And so, I worked at home and at work. My mother was very proud of me when I was, you know, or so she said. But she expected me to work. She did.
What was the relationship between, well, first before I ask you that, were most of the students that went to work at Avion girls? What?
No. The boys who weren't old enough or didn't want to go and weren't really called upon. I think they were at 18, they had to go. But if they were 17 and didn't want to join the Navy, they were the seniors that went to that needed the money probably and went to work at Avion. But they all knew they were going, so they were fearful. You see, we felt sorry for them because they all had this, oh boy, as soon as this is over with, we're going. And we felt sorry for them, the girls. Mm-hmm. And they were very quiet. In fact, you hardly knew they were there. You see, we knew, the girls knew, that once this is over, they were going on to work. They knew that once this was Avion the contract was finished, they were going to war. So they were in a far worse, frame of mind, would you call it? They were sad, they were fearful. And it was sad. They were pretty young to be facing such a future. So there wasn't any, you know, we didn't have any, there was no dating, you know what I mean? There was no, how can I put it? We resented the older men because they were so smug. And they always felt, acted like, well, we've got it made. And they were the bosses, and they cracked the whips. So
yeah, I was going to ask.
There was a certain resentment there. Uh huh. But we still did our jobs. Still, we looked down on them. You know. We didn't feel that they were nice people. I'm sorry to say, but it's true. The ladies were okay. We felt the fellows should be doing, you know, a little more than what they were doing. Because they eventually ended up just sort of sitting back and letting us do all the work. Eventually, as soon as they got good enough, the kids got good enough, they really didn't earn their money. They didn't.
What was their attitude towards you as workers and students, especially the girls?
Oh, there was a few that were flirts. That one that offered to take me to the picnic asked me to go out. He was a flirt, if that's what you mean. He's as gabby as could be. And there was something about him that the minute he got around me, I couldn't think of a word to say. So he must have thought I was the dumbest thing that ever lived. Because he did all the talking, and I didn't care for him, and I didn't want him to think that I was interested, so I got nervous, and I didn't trust him. I didn't trust any of them, and they were not to be trusted, believe me, because that's the way all the girls felt, was stay away from them. And none of them were pushy. They were, I think, amongst themselves, they were very close. They were all pretty much the same age, the older adults. You know. And then they were still relaying to Avion, to the mother country. I mean, the mother country, the mother factory. I believe they're still in business. They were making mobile homes, I think. Big ones, those big mobile homes. So, no, there was a definite wall. You know. But we were all so busy that we didn't have time to socialize. We were not there to socialize. We were there to produce. And every minute was accounted for. The 10 minutes that we got were spent going to the bathroom, and if you took a little snack, you gobbled that down, right? Mm-hmm. And then back to work again. And the minute it was time to leave, we couldn't wait to punch out and get out of there and rush over to the bungalow and put on our school clothes and then dash to the cafeteria to try and get some lunch because we had to be in class. It didn't give us much time. We only had 45 minutes to get from Avion to get our clothes to the cafeteria and munch and gulp and be in class along with the rest of the kids. We showed up half dead. You know, really. We felt grubby. You know, after working in a place like that, I don't know, there's a film that goes out. After all, there's a lot of filing. There's a film of steel. And you really needed a shower after leaving there. So we didn't have much chance. You know, I still had on the same blouse that I had worked on, and I learned to tuck my slip into my pants so that all I had to do was take off my pants and put on a skirt, and the top was already done. So I got very fast at that. Boy, the pants would roll up and into a sack. and have lunch, as I say, in the cafeteria. We always got what was left. Mm-hmm. There was not very much left because everybody else had already been through the line. Oh, but we got enough. And everybody kept asking, well, the ones in class who knew that I worked at Avion, you saw in my book, what happened? Why did you do this? They were both, the ones in my class would say, why do you do it? You look so tired. You know? But I had already started. I couldn't get out of it.
Would you have gotten out of it if you could?
No. I never get out of anything. You know, once I start something, I just stay with it. I've learned, too, to be a little more careful, though. I don't know if I would do it over again. I think that's one thing that we do have, that we still discuss. If we had it to do over again, would we have done it? And I don't know. In retrospect, I would say no. I don't think it's a good idea to rush around like that and to go from one thing to another. But it was too much of a rush.
Was it easy?
It didn't do me any good. The job, it didn't help me get another job. See, that's what I thought it would do, but it didn't. But, you know, except for learning to punch a time clock and to be there early and to really push. And I think that's why they kept me at Sterling, because I turned out to be fairly good. I was fast at learning and working. I was a good hard worker. But like I told you, after the war, it became harder and harder to keep the job.
Was it easier to work with the women from Avion than it was to work with the men?
The older ladies?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. They, at first, they were the trainers. They trained us, and they wanted us to do well. So they were very nice. They motherly, I would say. It was the men who cracked the whip. You know, the plant manager, the big bosses.
Were the women? What position did the women have?
They were lead women. Eventually, they all became lead women and lead men. And I think they brought in extra people to train us. You know, it's too hazy to remember faces at the beginning. But I think they thinned out their ranks. I'm not very certain about that. So that it left the work to the kids. They didn't want an abundance of adults there, although in the picture that I gave you, there were quite a few adults there. Yeah. So you see, it was a big plant, and that picture didn't include everybody. A lot of us didn't show up for the picture, and I was one. You don't see me there. And nobody that I know went. We didn't want to be seen there. Well, we still felt like we were in high school, and we were seniors, and we were graduating from high school, and here we were working at Avion, and we didn't want our high school class book to have our picture as workers, you know, at Avion. That's silly. And I'm sorry now that I didn't go. But they took the picture at noon when we were leaving. So we were still in our work clothes. And then what they did was they held them And then the kids that came in the afternoon in their work clothes were pooled together, and their pictures were taken. I didn't wait. I knew it was going to be taken, so I just left, you know, on purpose. And I did that all by myself, and it turned out that practically everybody I know did the same thing, because they're not in the picture either. That's funny.
Was there any union activity at all?
Absolutely none. Oh, no. No. Well, there was some unfairness, too. I mean, if you want to look at it that way. Once you have a job, you don't ask questions. But when I got sick, I'll never forget this. I was so mad. I was inspection, you know. And I inspected the doors, all of them. So I was sick for, oh, maybe 2 or 3 days. I forget, strep throat or something. And when I came back, the doors were all waiting for me. They hadn't been touched. Of course, this was, and I do think it was when we were working full time, you know, like the 8 hours. And I kept wondering, what in the world did the guy in back of me do and the guy in back of him do? They did nothing. They got paid. I didn't get paid. And they waited for me until I inspected every one of those doors and then the ones that were coming in. So can you imagine how hard I had to work in order to keep up and to catch up? And I didn't get paid extra. But they got paid for doing nothing. And I got balled out for being out. Things like that stay with you. But it just seemed to me that somebody else could have inspected those doors. They did have two grown... They took advantage of us. That's, I hate to start complaining. But those are the things, too, that I thought was rather unfair because they didn't pay me. And yet I had to do the work. So there were certainly... And if we'd have had a union, I think that might have been a case for a union. You know, they don't care. Nobody cares.
You said during the week that you went to bed by 8 o'clock. What kinds of social things would you do on the weekend?
We didn't do anything. On Sundays, we were too tired Saturday to do much of anything. Because Saturdays was devoted to washing our hair, you know, and taking care of our personal clothes. And I had a certain rooms to clean at home. And we all gave up church. We're too tired. So Sunday, we visited one another at our homes.
Girlfriends,
the ones that I still keep in touch with. I was always so happy when they came over to my house. And then sometimes the fellows that we knew that were in the service who happened to be home maybe at the same time, they would be out looking for girls, you know, that they knew. So they would visit the different homes hoping that they knew that we congregated, you know. So they were looking for us. And sometimes they'd end up at my house and really, we just take pictures. Of each other, you know. We took a lot of pictures. But they didn't have cars. If they got together, you see, it would be 4 or 5 or 6 in one car, in a brother's car or some car. And they couldn't afford to take us anywhere because they didn't have any money. Servicemen were making, I think they said $21 a month. Did you ever hear that? You never heard that? Well, that's what they were making. How can they afford? After the war, I paid for the things. If I liked a fella, I mean, everyone of them were in uniform, and I would only, and I ended up only going out with the ones that I remembered from Garfield. Mm-hmm. They were the ones I trusted. And half the time we went Dutch. He did well to pay his way into a movie. And that went on for a long time. We were the ones that had the money, the girls, because we were working. And they didn't have any money because they were in the service. And when they came out, they didn't have any jobs. So if we dated at all with the young, you know, the kids or the boys at first, either we went Dutch or we paid for them too. If we wanted to go bad enough, why, you know. Isn't that awful? But that was the norm then, I think. Seems to me that that's what was happening. I didn't go out, so you know, who are you going to go? You going to go out with somebody and pay their way into a movie? Would you do it?
Sure, if I had to.
You had to like them, though.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Well, that's what I meant. If I liked them, I did, you know, I took them to the show. No, but not when I was working at Avion. There was nobody there that, or anywhere, that I wanted to go out with. I was writing letters. If that was the only social exchange I had, was, oh, I'd love to receive letters from the ones that I cared about. I read those letters over and over. They became my life's blood. They really, and then too, I wrote to quite a few, you know, the ones that really needed it. It seems they were so lonely, the ones in the South Pacific. Mm-hmm. So I learned to be a pretty good letter writer.
Did you go out at night with your girlfriends at all?
No, not during the week. Not when I worked at Avion. I was too tired, like I told you. Of course, you get desperate after a while, you know. And I'm trying to remember what in the world we ever did. If anything, we would go out on a Saturday night. But I just can't remember where we would go. I think sometimes we got up enough, in the summertime, we got up enough energy to go to the beach. And then it was on the red car, they called it, the red car. But we always regretted that because we came back sunburned and tired, and so we just didn't think that was a very good idea. And then, too, some of the fellows had come back, again, see, it's all war, had come back, and they were in hospitals. And if we'd hear that somebody that we thought was just wonderful was in a hospital somewhere, we'd bake cookies. That was sacrifice. It really was. It took a lot of sacrifice. And on a Sunday, we'd find out what bus would take us there. And we'd get an early start. We didn't do this very often. He had to be pretty wonderful or in our eyes. And we'd get together, you know, meet at this bus, wherever this bus, you know, the bus that was going to take us to Corona, that's where the hospital was that we went to once, with a batch of cookies, and we thought we were just wonderful to do that, you know, just, surprise, you know, here we are, aren't you delighted to see us, and the poor guy's half dead, you know, he didn't care whether we came or not, and he was embarrassed because he was in the hospital, and they were changed. They were different. They were not the fellows that we had dancing or flirtatious or cute or full of life. They were just not like that at all. So that sort of sunk in, the fact sunk in that they had changed. And so I was sort of prepared for it when the war came. It was over. I had an idea that they had changed quite a bit. And we were just happy that they came back alive and healthy, as healthy as they were. But no jobs, no future. They did. I think they knew they had a future, and more or less they knew what they were going to do. We just didn't know. we were left out of that part of their lives. And eventually, well, sure, they got counseling. They had a lot going for them, but we didn't know that. So they those who could went to college, and those, I don't know what happened to a lot of them. I don't know what happened to my husband and his brother. His brother was one who dropped out of school and joined the Navy at 17. A lot of them did. The majority did.
Were there any of your girlfriends also Mexican? Or?
Well, not in grammar school. When I went to grammar school, I wanted to be a part of everybody, and it was, you saw the picture, we were all mixed. It was, to me, they were just kids. I didn't know the difference, except for the language, mm-hmm. you know. And, of course, I took it for granted that I would learn. It never occurred to me that I was different, that different. And everybody was so nice that I warmed up to them, and they warmed up to me. I think it's because they saw me trying so hard. And I did lean towards Vicki because I thought that she would speak, that she would help me interpret, you know. But she didn't. She just spoke English to me, and I just struggled. I don't know how in the world I did it, but through osmosis is all repetition and hearing the same thing over and over again, I finally caught on. But I do remember making a special effort to enlarge my vocabulary. I kept working on my vocabulary, always. And asking a lot of questions. What does this mean? What does that mean? And how do you put, you know, how do you say this? And how do you put words together? Of course, this was when I was much younger. And by the time I was in high school, though, I was a junior high, really. I was on an equal level with the rest of the kids. And I was proud of that, you know. And my friends were mixed. They were Russians. They were, a Russian girl, a Scandinavian girl, a Japanese girl. Maybe it was a school that I went to, but they encouraged this. They told us that we were all one. And we used to have an international day where on that particular day, everybody dressed up in their native costume. And those who were hams, like me, would put on a little program. Of course, we rehearsed for months before this, you know, to put on a little program for the school on International Day. And the Russians would do, you know how they get down, and the boys would do that, and then the balalaikas, is that what they play? And they'd sing, and they'd do the folk dancing, and then we did Spanish dancing. And we were just as happy as you could possibly imagine. We didn't have, this is why I tell you, we had all these memories of all these happy times and wonderful people that we associated with. And so then when the war came, Martha Yamamoto was sent to a concentration camp here. Never saw her again. And the boys thinned out constantly, you know. So we were more and more, the girls were thrown together more and more. And yes, there was trouble then. The girls started to bicker, you know, a little bit. You put a lot of women together. We were becoming women, after all. They started to get on each other's nerves. Yeah. Because they were sad and they were mourning. Mm-hmm. And sometimes things were misunderstood, and then we had some racial problems too. I don't know why, but it came about.
Right at Garfield, right then,
you know, it just seems as if, I guess we were grieving, and I guess eventually, say the English girls were grieving over their English boys, and so I guess we felt, well, we'll grieve for the Mexican boys, you know. We're their supporters. We're their heart. We're the, you know, maybe that's the way it should be. So we did start drawing lines then. And I ended up writing to Mexican boys, all the Mexican boys. I didn't write to any American. We're all American, but I mean any other nationality, because they needed it. They needed letters from home. So maybe they were neighbors, or maybe they were fellows that we had grown up with. But eventually, those were the ones that I wrote to. And I thought I might end up marrying one of them. You know, I expected to, because I'd known them so long. Yet when they came back, they were not interested in marriage, or, you know, they couldn't. They didn't have the resources. They couldn't support a wife. And the ones that did want to get married, I wouldn't marry, you know. I didn't write to them anyway, but they weren't, they were not nice. They were, you knew they weren't going to make good husbands. I didn't write to anybody like that, but it became a kind of a problem. Yes, oh, the lines were drawn racially. Whenever you're going to go into a situation where there's going to be money